My name's Michelle Owu, and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust. The object of the research is to compile a picture of contemporary Britain. The date is the 22nd of July 2009, and the time now is 4:11 a.m. Can you tell me, please, your name, your age, and where you come from?
My name's Amelia Watts. I'm 18, and I come from Tunbridge Wells in Kent.
How did you get here today?
I drove. Most of the way until we got to Trafalgar Square, and then my dad drove. Yeah. We swapped really fast in a diplomatic car port, so we probably shouldn't say that, but yeah.
Why did you swap?
Because we couldn't work out whether you're how long you're allowed to, or whether there's anywhere to stop on Trafalgar Square. We thought it's a giant roundabout, probably not, but yeah.
How did you first hear about the project?
Where did I first hear about it? I think I read it in an interview with Anthony Gormley in the Sunday Times magazine. Yeah, one of the journalists went to his studio and talked to him about something completely different, but he ended up writing the whole interview about this project because obviously it was on his mind.
What was it about the project that appealed to you?
How interactive it is, I think, that not only can people apply, like anyone, not just specific people, it's not just for an age group or for a specific group in the population, and so that people can watch it afterwards. And also the weird thought that someone a long way in the future might think, because I know that they've had archive programmes where they've looked back at, I mean, they did it with when the Poet Laureate changed, at all the readings of poetry, but they've also done it with like the way people speak 60 years ago. I think the latest they can get is probably 100 with recordings, but yeah, that's just an intriguing thought that someone in the future might one day be interested in this.
Was that something that appealed to you, the archive aspect of the project?
Yeah, it did. I'm quite interested in history, and the fact that we can now record and probably getting better and better and making our recordings last. Because I suppose actually it depends whether there's computers in the future, but things like wax discs weren't going to last very long, and film on celluloid not going to last very long, but microchips that you can't actually destroy physically, they'll last a long time, so it's good.
Can you describe what you're wearing, please?
I'm wearing a dress, and it's blue, and it's actually made as authentically as I could, hand-sewn to a Jane Arnold design, and what she does is she is specifically interested in the Elizabethan period, and she has gone to a lot of museums, most of them in Germany, America and the UK, and she looks through their archives and through their back catalogue for existing garments from the period, and then takes down all the measurements she can, all the how which stitch is used, because they use a really interesting stitch on the seams that take a lot of pressure. And so you can look at her books, and you can look at other books, and some people, some members of the group, I'm a member of the Tudor group, which is a late Elizabethan historical reenactment group, and some of our members have also done research. And so we hand sew the items. We, as far as possible, we use hand-woven fabrics, and we try and hand-dye them ourselves, or there's a lady who runs a business called the Mulberry Dyers, and she does a lot of authentic dyeing. And so yes, I'm wearing a late Elizabethan dress, lower middle class. Yeah.
What might the women who wore this type of costume, what might they have done?
In the period? Oh, that's actually a really interesting fact, because what happened in the late Elizabethan period was it was almost like the dawn of the middle class, because all of a sudden there wasn't so much hand to mouth subsistence farming in Britain. There was actually a lot more wealth, and there was a lot of opportunities, especially in trade. Not only obviously this whole idea of the New World, but also within Europe, it was almost as though the distances started shortening, and they. You know how the idea of like the aeroplanes shortened distance? Well, in the late Elizabethan period, people got more of a grasp on their position in the world and how they could manipulate that for their own improvement, not really for the improvement of others, but for their own improvement. And so there's this rise of the middle class, and there's a lot more booksmen, and there's a much higher level of literacy than people think there was, partly as a way of influencing people, because obviously with the change from Catholicism to Protestantism and the idea of the Bible in English, what's the point of the Bible in English if people can't read it? And so both in churches and in the home, most people, including girls, were taught some level of reading, not writing necessarily or mathematics, but reading definitely. So yeah, so a girl my age would probably actually, of my social status that my dress kind of gives away, I would be probably working, trying to earn enough money to afford my own house and to afford to get married, because lower middle class people and lower class, they couldn't actually afford to get married until their mid-20s. And so normally they worked as servants or on farms as servants, or in shops even, or in some other sort of trade. Not normally actually making the clothes, because that was mainly a male job, but in a lot of other trades. Whereas the more upper class people got married a lot earlier because they didn't have the issue of money. So it's quite similar to nowadays, that people have to save up and wait and afford a house and then afford to get married.
Did you make this costume yourself?
Yeah, I did, entirely. Well, it's kind of a work in progress, really. I probably made it in 2005. So it's lucky I haven't grown very much. But this year I re-lined it, because I realised that actually the way I'd lined it meant it didn't fit properly. So we just, what we have to do is, because all the garments that we take our clothes from are a much higher social status, because the garments like these, there was a big second-hand trade in garments, and so a garment like mine would have been sold to someone slightly smaller, so cut down to fit them, and then maybe cut down to make something else. And then maybe used as stuffing in a blanket, or even made into a blanket, and so, or just put in a cupboard and ignored, and so it never survives. You get a couple of male garments where people, because obviously in Denmark and places like that, if people fall in bogs, then their clothes survive. But normally they're slightly earlier, those garments. But most of them are actually from tombs, because if you get the right conditions, especially in Spain, if you get the right conditions, they just, apart from, on top, not underneath, but on top, they survive perfectly. And so we actually have a whole range of garments. So some of the people in my group, they have really, really class nobility, hand-sewn silk. I mean, when we were asked to estimate how much they were worth for our insurance, and the best guess is from £10,000 to £100,000. I mean, the materials themselves cost about £6,000 per garment, and so we have to save up as a group. It's quite a strange hobby that takes so much of your money, but it's really enjoyable. But yeah, so one of the girls, she has red stockings, red silk stockings, knitted, and you wouldn't think that people have worn red silk stockings, considering you can't see them. So it was just obviously this girl, it was just for her. It was just the fact she knew that she would be wearing red silk stockings. And she was, I think she was the daughter of a duke in Spain, and they found her in her grave, perfectly preserved, complete with her red silk stockings. It's amazing, really.
What's the book you've got on your—
It's called The Book of Natural Magics, and it's actually got nothing to do with magic, which, because obviously the whole hint with natural magics is unnatural magics. They weren't so forward-thinking that they no longer believed in witchcraft. So natural magics is more like an idea of science. And so this book is kind of a guide to all sorts of information that you wouldn't necessarily know, but would help be helpful to you. So, what sort of things are there? There's lots of things. So, what there's all sorts of ideas about animal husbandry and about how you can catch animals. And so there's a certain type of fish which you obviously catch with a mirror because it's very vain. And to catch elephants, you put lady elephants in a pit and that tempts the male elephants in, and then you remove the plank and then they can't get out. So it's not necessarily the most realistic book. And there's other things about making gems, which is obviously fraud, but yes, making gems, and just hints about illness. So this page I'm looking at the moment is about childbirth. And it's not really a practical guide, it's more a book of on interest. In fact, at the beginning, he the author, who's called John Batista Porter, he's saying that because his book was so well received, which I think is a hint that lots of people bought copies, he's decided to reprint it, I think, to get lots more people to buy copies. But yeah, and so it is authentically bound and authentically printed. But yeah.
How does this fit in with the rest of your life?
Excuse me. How does this fit in with the rest of my life?
For
a living, well, at the moment, I work in retail, but that's an intermediary step. I've got a place at York University for 2010 to do history, unsurprisingly. But with my life, it fits in that I prioritise this over most other things. So it takes up a lot of my time and a lot of my attention. But, you know, I've made friends through it, and it interests me, so I think it's worth it.
How did you first come across this circle society?
The one I am a member of, I first came across when we were travelling to the Isle of Wight, and we went to the Portsmouth Historic Docklands, and two of the members were working there. They've got a replica of the Mary Rose Galley kitchen, so they were working on that, and I just got chatting to them. I was 12 at that point, so I think they were a bit freaked out about how interested I was, and then I emailed them and I was like, do you accept minors as members? And they said that was fine as long as they could meet my parents, and that my parents were right with it, and that my parents were happy to take me places. And then what had happened was that ever since we were tiny, I think the first event we went to was at Battle of Hastings, and so that was just as members of the public. And then we, all through our childhood, I mean, obviously my brother loves knights and that sort of thing. But yeah, so we, all through my childhood, we attended events as members of the public, and we always wanted to join. My parents were never that keen, unsurprisingly. A lot of other things on their mind, like bringing up three children. And so, yes, when I was 12, I met these people, and I wanted to become a member, and then my brother and my sister wanted to become members, and my mum and dad thought they'd come along just to see what it was like, and then they all joined. And so now we do it as a family. Yep. Even though my sister no longer lives at home, we still, it's kind of our family activity together, spend time together.
And how often do you take part in these activities?
Well, it really depends on the time of year. So we had our last event in June, and before that actually we had four weekends where we had an event a weekend. We have another one in October and another at Christmas. It'll start again following summer, because most of these, most of the stately homes and organised events we work at are based in the summer, so people will enjoy visiting. And we are, it is a professional group, but the members are voluntary, so the group gets paid, which covers some of our costs.
What are you going to do with your animal?
I'm going to read from the book. I'm going to start at the beginning and see how far I get. Yeah. So, well, it'll, by reading the introduction, I'll just give people an idea of what the book's about. And then some interesting fun facts.
How would you describe the sort of person you are?
Good question. Hard question. I'm probably an enthusiastic person. I just like taking part in stuff. I enjoy talking to people. Probably prefer meeting new people to meeting people I've already met. I just, new experiences are really interesting to me.
How does this compare as a new experience?
It's pretty good so far. Yeah, I'm not so sure about what the heights are going to be like. So I'm the sort of person who can't jump off a stool. I have to carefully climb down. But luckily, there's a safety net, so I know in my head, I know I'm fine. But it's like with bridges, in your head you know you're fine, but actually in reality you're like, oh God, oh God, oh God. But it'll be good.
Who are you doing this for, would you say?
This morning when I had to get up at 2 a.m, I'm probably doing this for my friends who might be travelling in to watch me. I'm thinking, if I'm not there, they'll be very disappointed. I'm thinking the people in the office just don't need the hassle. But that was only because it was 2 a.m. and I really didn't want to get out of bed. But I'm probably doing it for me overall, I think. It's actually a really selfish thing to think that people will be interested in what you have to say. It's kind of a thing that is discussed often in the media about how people on the internet publish things they want to say, and it's kind of vain to think that other people are interested.
What's been your friends and family's reaction to your decision to take part?
Generally positive. I mean, a few people have been, I mean, after they know that I do historic reenactment, I don't think they're surprised by anything I want to do. They're like, oh, she's weird. She would want to do that. But generally, I think it's positive. I mean, I know a couple of people who also applied, and I think they're a bit jealous that I got a place. But I wasn't expecting it. It was chance. I was very, very surprised. I was like, oh, God, oh, wow. But yeah, I think positive is probably the broadest description of their reaction.
Do you have any hopes or expectations about what it might be like?
No, I don't think I have any expectations. It's going to be strange. It probably feels very isolated up there. Because it's one of those things, like, you'll suddenly realise it's a totally different perspective on, I mean, Trafalgar Square is something that's very, very familiar to me, but I've never looked at it from 4 metres above. I don't think I've ever looked at anywhere from 4 metres above without being inside a building, so.
Were you aware of Anthony Gormley's work before this project?
Yes, but quite aware. I looked at him for some projects for my schoolwork, but I just loved his work. I guess isolation is a theme he looks at, but I'm very aware of his work and I enjoy it a lot. And I commend him for doing some interesting work.
What was the project work that you were doing at school?
I did the International Baccalaureate in the sixth form, and I did art. And compared to A-level, it gives you much more free rein. And so I looked at humans as landscape as my project. I just chose whatever I wanted to do. It was an unusual link because I don't think he looks at humans as landscape. I think he looks at humans as objects in their own right rather than necessarily people, just objects. And so I thought it was a good comparison to what I was trying to look at as a mass of people. He looks at individuals.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No. It's been a very thorough interview.
Thank you very much.